The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, America. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Furthermore with Amanda Head. I am so excited that you are here, and I am really excited about this interview today. I think for a lot of us in our daily lives, we have friends, maybe even family, people who have changed their political ideology and they have been red-pilled. And I love hearing red-pill stories. I think that it is important to pay attention to these stories, because when you find out what I'm going to talk about in this interview with him, about what the moment of curiosity and the breakup. For people who have become red-pilled, who have left the Democrat Party, there's always a moment of curiosity, some issue that makes them scratch their head and think twice, and then they start asking questions. And usually, I can't remember whose quote this is, but the first moment that someone starts thinking and asking questions is the last moment that they are a Democrat. And then you have the breakup. The breakup is that final issue, the final straw, where they say, nope, I am done. I am dumping the Democrat Party. I am going to have a conversation with a guy named Mark Stevens today, who is one such case. Imagine meeting someone at your polling place, and this person tells you that they campaigned for John Kerry, that they campaigned for Hillary Clinton, they campaigned for Barack Obama, they started their college's Democrat club, but they are voting for Donald Trump. Well, that is the conversation that I'm going to have with Mark Phillips on the other side of these commercials. We'll be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back, everybody, to Furthermore with Amanda Head. As some of you have heard over the course of my life in public politics, whether it's on TV or on radio or even on this podcast, living here in Los Angeles, you might be surprised to know how many red pill stories I have kind of collected as I've gone along in my life of being vocal about being a conservative. And I saw a tweet or a post on X, I don't even know what we're supposed to call it these days, that really caught my eye. And I'm going to use this as the basis of my conversation today. This is going to be a bit of more long form today. I know you guys are used to more 15, 20 minute interviews from legislators and things like that. But this, I feel like, is deserving of a much longer conversation. The tweet that caught my eye was from an account at XDemMark. And this was the tweet. In eighth grade, I campaigned for John Kerry. In 11th grade, I campaigned and got pics with Hillary Clinton. In 12th grade, I campaigned for Barack Obama. In college, I started the College Democrats Club. Tomorrow, I'm voting for the first time as a Republican in a presidential primary, and I'm voting for real Donald Trump. Mark Stevens, I am honored to have you on this podcast. I cannot wait to hear your story. I haven't heard much of your background except for what you put out there on X. And I just want to applaud you for your courage because, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage of conviction to reflect on past ideology and politics and maybe change your mind about some things. But there's a further courageous step, which is posting that publicly. So kudos to you and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much for including me today. I am very honored. That tweet, it basically does sum up my transformation there a little bit, but I'd like to tell you a little bit more in depth how that all started. I always like to watch the news. I was, you know, that dorky kid who liked to watch the news with their mom and dad after dinner. And, you know, we were watching 6 o'clock news. And, you know, my parents and my grandparents were all registered Democrats. And, you know, you're just, you know, you assimilate the same way as they do. And so, you know, I campaigned for John Kerry in 2004, when I was in eighth grade. I went to every registered Democrat voter's house in Patton, where I'm from, and I gave them like their ballots on who to vote for. And, you know, that was actually in a time where just the borough, Patton borough, was probably 70% Democratic. Wow. Back in 2004, I would say it's probably flipped this to Republican now, the same way. So in eighth grade, you know, I thought I was making a difference campaigning for John Kerry. And then 2006, I campaigned in the governor's race. And then, you know, I started going to all these county rallies. And, you know, I canvassed for Hillary Clinton in 2008. And I do have to note, I was a big John Edwards fan until I found out that he cheated on his wife while she was dying with cancer. I actually was involved in forensics, and my speech that I did was for John Edwards, campaigning for John Edwards. And then John Edwards, the day before the first forensics meet, drops out of the race. So I had to try to memorize that whole speech. And I just said, vote for John Edwards on a write-in ballot, you know, which was pretty much pointless.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got a bumper sticker signed by Bill. I got a picture taken with Hillary. And, you know, I just thought that was so cool. I became active in my local municipality, Patton, and I was the first and only junior councilman that they had. I came up with fundraisers for to benefit our local park and pool. And then whenever I went into college, I founded the Pitt Johnstown College Democrats, and I would organize rallies for the Dems every year. So like I still am in great terms with our former state senator and our past congressmen and the commissioners
Are Democrats,
who all are Democrats. Yes. Okay. But I have to note, the funny thing about where I come from is Democrats in Cambria County, Pennsylvania, they wouldn't be Democrats if they lived anywhere else. Democrats in Cambria County, you got to be a blue dog Dem to get elected. There's no one that's a liberal gets elected over there. That's just John Murtha. I don't know if that name strikes familiar to you. Jack Murtha was right. He was always right about that. You know, they could never elect a liberal in Cambria County. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this, the transformation from it being a solid, reliable Democratic county, it's become now a solid Republican county as well.
How long did it take for that to happen?
Well, it slowly started. The last time they went blue was in 2008 with Obama. And then they have.
That's less than a generation. Yeah.
That's already almost 20 years. So that's how long it's been. I mean, they voted for Trump in 2016. I think it was like by 60%.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that just shows you right there how much of a change they have. So, you know, I was president of College Dems, organizing all these rallies and stuff. I ran for borough council in 2013 when I was still in college, mind you. And, you know, that was when I slowly started to realize maybe I really wasn't a Democrat, because it was then I started to notice just how big government bureaucratic groups, organizations, they like to slow municipalities down on projects, and then they like to fine you for being slow on these projects.
Yeah.
You know, it's so I you know, obviously I became frustrated, because it's not like before, you know, if you wanted to do something good, you didn't have to go through all of this red tape. Now, there, for any simple project that you take on, there's so much red tape for you to go through. Yeah. So when I was on council, you know, I was probably like 20, 24. Like I started to realize, you know, maybe I'm not as blue as my blue eyes, you know. I didn't really want to go out and say that too often, but it was a thought in the back of my mind. And whenever Trump ran in 2015, whenever he first announced, and he debated, you know, my great uncle, he always used to say, Mark, you need to watch both sides of the news. You know, and that was at a time when it wasn't as politicized, but, you know, you could watch maybe MSNBC and you could watch Fox, and you could pretty much figure out on your own, you know, maybe the truth lies somewhere in the middle, you know? So I watched the first Republican debate. And, you know, I was still a big Clinton fan at that point in time. I was all for Hillary. But I noticed just how the media, like, just went after Trump. And, you know, it was just a constant jab, one right after another. Like, they weren't even focusing on the issues. They were asking him what his thoughts on Rosie O'Donnell were. Like, that's completely irrelevant.
You're right.
So, I mean, through time, you know, like I said, I was still involved with county Democratic campaigns. Like, I really was active in their commissioner's race in 2015. And, you know, I, the following year, got pictures with Bill and Hillary and Chelsea. And, you know, I'm like wishing them the best of luck and everything and going to their events. And, you know, I thought, you know, Hillary's going to make it and stuff. And well, you know, that didn't happen.
You're right.
Trump gets in there, and, you know, it wasn't as bad as they acted like the whole world was going to end.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't World War III. The economy didn't collapse. It didn't break out civil war.
that's exactly what we got right now is, you know, we're on the verge of hopefully not World War III. And, you know, inflation going through the roof and the social issues that they're just pushing down our throats. I don't support that. And I whenever I moved to Blair County, I did switch then to Republican. And then this is funny, I actually did switch back just briefly to Dem, so I could vote for Joe in the primary in 2020, just so I could take a jab at my one coworker who had a Bernie Sanders bobble hat in her office. I'm a caseworker, and she was just as socialist as they come with her Bernie Sanders bumper sticker and stuff. So I just out of spite, I voted for Joe in the primary, and I didn't change it back. When I did change it back, and I don't ever plan on changing it back to D or yeah, to Democrat, is after the whole debacle with Afghanistan withdrawal. That was pretty much a final straw.
Okay.
Anyone with, a non-biased opinion can watch even the news on NBC and just watch. Why are we leaving our ammo there? Why
Yeah.
is this being done so quickly and sloppy and everything? I mean, it was just a complete disaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I haven't switched back since.
Well, we now know that he had people around him who were, I mean, the intelligence wasn't there with respect to withdrawing, and
Right.
he decided to do his own thing. I mean, same thing he did in Ukraine with firing Viktor Shokin. We know from State Department memos that the opinion of the State Department was that Viktor Shokin was doing a great job, and he fired him anyway. And we all know now why, because of Burisma. Okay, I wanted to ask you about, and I. When it comes to people who have walked away from the Democrat Party, there are two different issues and two different moments that I like to talk about. The first one is the moment of curiosity and then the breakup. And the moment of curiosity is that first issue that made you start thinking, maybe I've been wrong about some things. And then the breakup, of course, I think as you described, was Afghanistan. What was the moment of curiosity for you? Was there one issue?
I wouldn't say it was one issue, but I would just say it was big government getting in the way. That would probably be the eye opener for one.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. I was one of those kids too who growing up, watching Dateline, and even if I did venture into the, comedic television space, I loved Nick at Night. So I was always kind of, the content that I viewed was older than I think what most people would expect at that age. And that has certainly driven my politics as well. When I was in college, I went through a phase where I didn't switch parties or anything. I didn't go Democrat, but I just started reading books on politics, on apologetics, not necessarily questioning my faith, but questioning why I believed what I believed. So I think a lot of us kind of go through a little bit of transition and maybe waver back and forth, but then we ultimately land in this place. And with respect to your parents being Democrat, are they still Democrat? Do you find that you are now influencing them?
I don't, but I feel that with their upbringing and my upbringing, I've worked for everything I've ever had.
Yeah.
My first car, when I was in college, my parents, they weren't wealthy by any means. They're probably, maybe lower middle class. And so, like, they were like, Mark, brutally honest, you're gonna need to buy your own car. My sister, she wrecked every car she's ever had. So I wasn't going to inherit any hand-me-downs from her. So, I mean, if I could have, I would have been nice. But so whenever I graduated college, I was in college, I'm sorry. Whenever I went into college, I worked two summer jobs. I worked for PennDOT Transportation. I was a flagger. And during the weekends, I worked at Seldom Seen Tourist Coal Mine, they closed since then, but it was a coal mine that was open for people to tour and learn about old coal mines. And
Yeah.
so I worked there during the weekends, and then I worked for Hickory Farms, selling meat and cheeses at the mall. I've
Nice.
done it. So, like, everything I've had, I've worked for. I'm not, and also, like, I was a Catholic, So I, you know, social issues are very important to me as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, in today's Democratic Party, it's just really extreme pushing, you know, LGBT and, you know, this whole, they're so pushing this sex changing on young kids.
Yeah.
And, you know,
okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be something I really wanted to discuss with you, because I know you are a husband, you are a dad, so you are part of the patriarchy, Mark. You are, you know, a part of that evil family unit. And I say that in jest, but the sad reality is that the family in this country, the family unit has been, I think at best destabilized, but at worst demonized. And there are so many, you know, social justice warrior types and dark money groups and woke organizations and Soros funded groups that are really trying to tear apart the fabric of our country, which at its core is the family unit. Do you think that for you as a husband and a father, that has been a big part of your transition? And do you think that for other men and women out there who are Democrats, but who are also parents or husbands or wives, do you foresee there being an even bigger shift on the political spectrum because of that tearing down of the family?
I do. I do. And I feel like it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, that was another thing that drew me to, you know, change political parties. I don't support the political correctness that, you know, they push so much.
And that seems to kind of be a Rust Belt type thing. I mean, I know other folks from Pennsylvania, and they're no nonsense type people. They, you know, the political tiptoeing to not hurt someone's feelings, they just don't buy into that, regardless of whether they have a D next to their name. That's just not something that they buy into. Am I judging people of Pennsylvania across the board pretty well?
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, people of Pennsylvania, they're always labeled as all being Amish, but that's also not true.
Yeah. Well, is it Lancaster that's the Amish?
Yeah, that's Lancaster. Yep. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so I want to ask you about your work, because I know that, you know, you said that you have worked for everything that you've ever owned. You mm-hmm. now are in social work. Now,
yeah.
I have someone who's very close to me who is a social worker. She is a social worker actually in Canada. And in Canada, they have a little bit different social justice issues. It's mostly, it mostly pertains to, and they change the name every year, and the old name, you know, becomes offensive. I'm trying to remember what the name is right now. First Nations or Indigenous, or I can't remember, whatever the case is, Native Americans, what we all think of as Native Americans. So she is very, very far left on practically every issue. And she is one of these anomalies who is a parent, she's a wife, but she is still very, very liberal. And I am convinced that it is because of this bubble that she lives in within social work. How much do you think that influences people in your field?
That's a very good question. I really don't know. I mean, what I do is I help those with intellectual disabilities and including autism. I help them get services, and I monitor their services, and I get them services. That's a job that, you know, it's very meaningful.
But, it sounds like it.
Yeah. I have a personal friend who I've been friends with since second grade, and he was in my wedding, and, you know, he's one of my best buddies, and he's also a very big Trump supporter, by the way.
Nice.
And so so yeah, I live and breathe this job.
Yeah. It sounds incredibly meaningful and difference making. So I applaud you on that. Speaking of your friends I first want to ask you about your wife. I'm not going to ask you to reveal anything personal, but politically speaking, when you guys got married, were you aligned? Has that shifted? Did she pull you one direction? Did you pull her another?
No, she's a registered Dem.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And how is that? Of course, she's a Pennsylvania Democrat, so that changes things, right?
She's a Pennsylvania Democrat. There are things she supports and there's things she doesn't support.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has many concerns over President Biden. You know, do some of his policies she doesn't feel have, you know, really helped the country. And, you know, she's very also concerned about his age.
Yeah.
My grandfather, he was 83 when he passed away, but he was president of the a local VFW.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, but that was also president of the local VFW, commander in chief. You're not commander in chief of the United States. That's
right.
That's a different situation.
Of course. Of course. Okay, so I want to expand that question to your friend group because, you know, maybe I'm different because I live in Los Angeles and it's a very liberal hub that I have had to kind of insulate myself with people who think more like I do so that I just don't go absolutely crazy. But for you in your friend group, where have you found yourself politically among your friends who have always voted Democrat?
Well, most of my teacher friends are registered Dem still.
Yeah.
It's funny because some of them aren't very much into politics, but like I have a couple friends who, you know, they're like never cared about politics before, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're tired of you know, Biden inflation, illegal immigrants, you know, coming over and yeah, you know, being catered to, and they're tired of the social issues being shoved down their throats. And then I have one friend who, you know, God love him, he's about as politically correct as they come.
Oh, gracious.
We don't even discuss politics because, you know, that would really hinder our friendship.
Yeah.
So like we're kind of a bit in the center.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you try to impact them?
At times.
Yeah. You have to be delicate with it, right? Like you can't.
You do. You
can't pound them.
Yeah. Yeah. It just depends on, I think, that person.
Yeah. And the way that they receive. A lot of my listeners and viewers of our TV show know that I'm a big fan of employing humor into politics because I have always felt like if you are the person who are on the wrong, you're on the wrong side of the equation, that if humor is brought into the conversation, it kind of dulls the pain of realizing how wrong you are. So I always kind of try to utilize that as a tactic for softening the blow because it is hard when you are faced with a situation where you realize, and I was telling you this before we started recording. A friend of mine here in Los Angeles who was my neighbor, but also one of my very, very dear friends. He was in my wedding. He comes to our family holidays. But we went together to vote in 2016. This was back when I was a single gal living in Hollywood. And we went to vote together and we laughed because he was voting for Hillary Clinton and I was voting for Donald Trump. And we just laughed about how we were basically canceling out each other's vote. But sometime around, you know, throughout the course of our friendship, I always tried to be very gentle with respect to needling him about politics. And I would usually try to phrase it as a question like, well, what do you think about Donald Trump making PrEP for the gay community? Because he was gay, making PrEP virtually free for the gay community. And he was like, that's not true. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, here's the HHS document about Trump's you know, legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really say much, but a few days later he came back and acknowledged that yes, in fact, that was true. And he had been told all along by people like Hillary Clinton, but other Democrats as well, that Donald Trump hated gay people and he hated the gay community, when in fact it was Donald Trump and his private club down in Florida who was one of the first clubs to admit people from the LGBT community. Well, at the time it was just the LGB community. T wasn't tacked on at that point. But I always find that being gentle about it makes a huge difference, because lo and behold, about two years later, he started sending me Hillary Clinton murder memes. And that's when I knew that the tables had shifted for him and he had totally changed his mind. But it's a delicate tightrope walk that you have to do sometimes with some people. Some people you can bludgeon them over the head with things and they will receive it well. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Twitter, on the other hand, you know, you open yourself out to so much.
Yes.
You know, in just from that tweet, you know, I've been called, oh, they said, oh, he's rich, or he must have a connection with Russia.
What? Or
he's a Russian bot. Oh yeah, I think I screenshotted the one. It was a doozy, calling me a Russian bot. And some of the people on there are just, you know, really pathetic. Of course, you have to question that. Are some of those people even real?
Of course, of course. Well, and I think for them, they are incredulous, because there are some people who are so consumed with their ideology and they exist in such a strong echo chamber
I have that issue with, you know, former teachers who, you know, knew me as that guy's going to be a future Democratic president, you know, or an old college professors are very, the ones at least on my end, they were very, 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 very liberal. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've posted something, and it wasn't even like in full support of Trump, but it was, I would say, a conservative minded thought. And they were like, shame on you. Or, you know, they do that shame tactic. I thought you knew better than this.
Uh-huh.
And,
I thought you were smarter than this. So like, that candid.
And,
yeah.
And the thing is like, my mom is on Facebook and I'm like, oh, hell, I just,
she's seeing this.
Yeah. I'm just going to delete this. I delete it. And, you know, my wife is like, are you stirring the pot again? And I'm like, you know, I'm a little bit, but.
Hey, from a fellow pot stirrer, I can appreciate it. And, you know, I think it's important to put that out there, because so many of these people that we were talking about, the people who live in this bubble, mm-hmm. they need to know that people like you exist. They
not
need
too
to
late,
know this.
Not too late to change parties.
Right.
It's never too
right.
late to change parties.
Yeah. And you know, it's the kind of people who I really want to kind of smack them in the face with stories like yours, but I will resist in an attempt to display a little bit of grace. But it's important, because people need to know. My dad used to say, it should hurt. It should be painful to be that stupid. And they're not all stupid. They're just sorely, sorely misguided. Some of them are stupid. But in instances like this, you know, yeah, it's going to hurt to realize how wrong you are, but it doesn't mean that we should try to protect them from that pain. So I applaud you for that. And I know you mentioned that Facebook is kind of one of those places where you know, you're more vocal on X because... because for a reason, then you are on Facebook
with less drama. Yep.
Of course. Okay. I want to ask you about your faith. You mentioned that you are a Catholic, and something that my co-host John Solomon and I spoke about on our TV show last year, because it was John who broke the story on Just the News about these FBI memos circulating about Latin mass attending Catholics, and the proclamation basically agency-wide that these people are white nationalists, Christian nationalists, crazy right-wingers. And there were a lot of Catholics who came out after that who were Democrats And that was a huge issue for them, that the president of the United States, because, you know, the FBI, everyone within these agencies serves at the pleasure of the president, essentially, and policy is top down. So a lot of folks had a problem with Joe Biden because of that. Do you know if there are Catholics within your parish, within your community, who do, first of all, did they even know about that? And second of all, did they take issue? That. Yeah,
that's
the issue.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows about that. I haven't even heard about that myself.
Yeah, it was an FBI that was circulated within a field office about Latin mass attending Catholics, and, you know, typically the more pro-life wing of mm-hmm. Catholics. And yeah, it was pretty disturbing to see that. And of course, now what we are seeing with not only the FBI, but agencies like the ATF using the might of their agency to suppress any type of political opposition or, you know, anything that contradicts their agency's ideology. It's pathetic to see. Okay, I want to ask you a little bit about some current news topics. So yesterday, Joe Biden had a Charlottesville moment, a very fine people moment, when he was asked about these Palestinian protesters, and he really straddled the fence. Now, with Donald Trump, of course, the very fine people moment wasn't what they said it was, because Donald Trump condemned the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis. So I kind of feel like it's a false equivocation, because Joe Biden actually did straddle the fence and say that there essentially were very fine people on both sides as far as Jewish Americans and then these pro-Palestinian protests. Your thoughts?
Sometimes it's best if he just doesn't say anything at all.
I think that's what they're trying to do. You know, we saw that in the election in 2020. He ran a basement campaign. Do you think that we're going to be seeing more of him heading into November?
I think, strangely enough, I do think you will.
Okay.
Because I mean, I've been watching the news. He does have more than six people spread out.
Yeah.
He might have maybe 200, though. You know, that might be a lot for him.
Yeah, but, I mean, he can't blame COVID this time around, right? So I feel like people are going to be asking questions.
If anything, it would be called lack of support.
Right, right. What do you think is going to happen in November?
I think it's going to be close.
Yeah.
I feel like it could either... I think it'll be close in the popular vote, and it'll be close in a couple swing states that, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada. I don't think Florida will be close. I don't think Ohio will be close.
Clean elections in those states.
And I don't think North Carolina is going to be close like they're hoping for.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be decided by a couple percentage points here and there in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin and Nevada.
Yeah. It's very easy to get lost in what seems to be positive results in polling with respect to President Trump, because you look at every poll and he's ahead, you know, in like five of the six swing states. In some polls, it's six out of six swing states. He's up 2 points with Hispanics, up 1 point with youth, up, you know, he's only, you know, 15 points behind Joe Biden in this category, which is a huge deal. And I think that it's a cautionary tale, because we did the same thing in 2020, and it really came back to bite us in the butt.
Well, they also came back to bite us last year. Was it last year? 2022?
Midterms, yep.
Midterms.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, we would have... Anybody who was watching the United States Senate debate between Dr. Oz and John Fetterman who appeared worse than Biden on his worst
cognitively
day.
Yeah.
I mean, it just wouldn't take much for anybody to like be like, this guy's not gonna make. There's just no way.
Do you think John Fetterman truly won that election, or do you think that there was too much fraud to know?
I don't think there was fraud. I don't believe there was.
But why would Pennsylvanians elect a vegetable? He was a vegetable at the time, basically.
I don't know. I don't know.
And a dead guy, right? Wasn't it in Pennsylvania, a guy who had died like 2 months prior, God rest his soul, of cancer, but they voted for him because he had a D next to his name?
Right. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I could talk for a long time about Patton borough elections and, you know, Dems. It's certain Democrats, especially chair people, they will vote for a Democrat if.
Yeah. Vote blue, no matter who.
It just doesn't matter with some people.
Yeah. Okay. So, before I let you go, I want to get back to your roots and your very youthful activism within the Democrat Party. And I want to ask you about that on the right side of the aisle, because the RNC since 2016 has gone through some changes as far as public opinion. I think that public opinion of the RNC was at probably the low it's been in at least the last two decades as a result of the 2020 election and Ronna McDaniel's perceived fecklessness, which I would agree with that perception. But now we've got Michael Whatley in there, and he's doing some really incredible things. You got President Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, in there also doing some incredible things. So I want to use that as the basis for this conversation about youth activism. I have seen some polls that show that this youngest generation, what is it, Generation Alpha, and of course Zoomers as well, Gen Z, that they are actually moving in a more conservative direction because they don't have the opportunities that their parents and their grandparents had. Now Joe Biden has the issue of Palestine, which the youth is going to be an issue for him with the youth vote. What do you see as the future of politics with respect to youth?
With respect to youth, just with my upbringing, I'm not even looking at Palestine, you know, anything going on over there. I'm looking at the more economical perspective where, you know, with inflation going skyrocketing as bad as it is due to Biden's Green New Deal policies, you know, what is this world going to be like when my daughter is in college, mm-hmm. looking for a job to, you know, make a couple bucks she could pay for her car, or help pay at least maybe for some payments, you know, is she really going to have anything available? We're at a point where they expect the minimum wage to be increased up to what, 17, 15, over $15 now dollars. You're in California where that's a complete new ballgame. Pennsylvania, we're still at $7.25, which I do believe it should be more than $7.25 an hour. That hasn't been increased since 2006.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't believe the wage should be living wage, but so much.
Mark, I think we're actually losing your audio a little bit. It sounds a little modulated.
Okay.
No, I can't hear you. I don't know if we can reset your audio, but I'm going to pick up where you left off, because you just made a really important point about minimum wage. It's not supposed to be a living wage. It's supposed to be the job that you get when you turn 16 and it's your first job and you can move your way. You can move up the rungs of the ladder and then, you know, move up to maybe a junior management position or something like that. But yeah, here in California, $20 minimum wage for fast food workers.
So many self checkouts and, you know, cashiers all run through machine. You don't see any human interaction doing
right.
That.
Yeah. I mean, even at restaurants, a sit-down restaurant, so many of them have iPads now. And what am I paying you for? When I was a server in Los Angeles, I was a singing server. And minimum wage, I think at the time, this is going to age me a little, was like 14 or 15 bucks or something. But I got good tips because we all were singing servers. You had to sing to work at the restaurant. But I was making minimum wage not just to be a waitress, but I also had to sing. And I look at the entitlement of fast food workers who think that to throw a bag of frozen potatoes in peanut oil, they deserve $20 an hour. It's unbelievable. And quite frankly, Mark, I think it is a symptom of what we are experiencing just across the, you know, politics in general. And I fear for our country, but people like you give me hope, because I know that there are people out there who are still critical thinkers who will take a nugget of information that might not necessarily line up with what they have always believed. And they start asking questions and they start broadening their perspective on things. And Mark Stevens, I think that you are a testament to a lot of the founding values in this country of bucking the norm and courage and a lot of those values that our founding fathers had. And I would encourage everybody to go find him on X. He is at EXXDem, as in Democrat, Mark with a K, XDem, Mark. Mark, thank you so much for joining me. It was an honor to have you on. You have an incredible story. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to take a very quick break, and I'll be back on the other side to wrap some things up.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Furthermore with Amanda Head. I mean, what did I tell you? Incredible, incredible story. And this is a guy who, you know, like he said, he was a Pennsylvania Democrat, a blue dog Democrat, but in an area that used to be 70% Democrat and it is now 70% Republican. And you heard him say it. This changed from just the early 2000s, which was the last time that they voted for a Democrat, his area of Pennsylvania, his district. And then in 2016, they went for Donald Trump. That is less than a generation. It didn't even take an entire generation for that area to flip from blue to red. And you have folks like Scott Pressler out there who are making an on-the-ground difference. They are out there doing incredible work, changing hearts and minds. And I think we all have to do that. We all have to do that within our own little corner of the country. I want to get to some news topics before we head out for the afternoon. So many of you have seen these absolute horror stories about squatting across America. There have been some pretty infamous ones, infamous instances that have taken place in New York. Notably, I think on Long Island was the first one that I saw. This poor woman who had inherited her parents' house and she was trying to sell it because she and her husband had moved elsewhere. And she was dealing with this squatter situation. And it's not just in blue states like New York. It is in purple states like Arizona. Arizona, who unfortunately has a blue governor, Katie Hobbs, who vetoed a squatting bill. Oh my goodness. So this was SB 1129. It was crafted by, some of you are familiar with the name Wendy Rogers as a state legislator there in Arizona, but this bill would have allowed the homeowner to call law enforcement as soon as they got to their house and they saw this person. They could pick up the phone, call 911, to have cops come and have this squatter immediately removed from their property. So the police, and it's not just, the bill was not just pertaining to homeowners' rights, it was also pertaining to the jurisdiction for police officers. So police who responded to this call, acting on the homeowner's affidavit, they would have permission and jurisdiction to go in and immediately remove this person, to evict this person from the homeowner's property. Now, this was a bipartisan bill. Wendy Rogers collected a gaggle of Democrats who were also behind SB 1129. And oh my goodness, Katie Hobbs vetoed it. I cannot imagine on an issue like this that just seems so incredibly absurd, but also black and white, that she would veto this. But she said, "Today I vetoed Senate Bill 1129. This bill fails to leverage existing legal mechanisms, respect the due process rights of lawful tenants, and minimize unintended consequences, such as for victims of domestic violence." So Wendy Rogers responded to this in the same manner in which I would have, because I was thinking the same thing, that it doesn't even sound like Katie Hobbs read the bill. She said, "This bill has absolutely nothing to do with landlord-tenant law and has exemptions for family members and anyone with an agreement to cohabitate." So Katie Hobbs, who I fully believe is only in office to protect Democrats from any type of election integrity efforts, apparently she doesn't have time outside of that to read the bill. But this squatting issue is heating up, and here in Los Angeles, we've got these issues here as well. We've actually had these issues for a while. I remember hearing a horror story about someone who had rented out this person had put it up for Airbnb for 10 grand a month. And this person was just chilling there for like 2 years. It was unbelievable. This was at least a few years ago. So finally, this issue is getting a little bit of coverage so that something can change. And I got to say, it's mostly happening in blue cities, which I'm not mad about, because you people get what you deserve when you vote. All right. Okay. On another topic, Joe Biden has signed that TikTok ban. Now, it will be a ban that will go into effect in January, unless ByteDance, which is the Chinese owner of TikTok, sells TikTok to a U.S. entity or an owner. Now, the reason I bring this up, TikTok, I think, is absolutely devastating our youth. Of course, there is always a First Amendment argument to be made, but I don't think that that argument really holds water when you take into account the fact that this is a company run by essentially elements of the CCP. That's foreign influence. And when you consider the primary demographic on TikTok is youth in America, I think that this takes on a totally different issue. But many of you saw last month when this ban was being considered, well, and months prior to that, when folks like Senator Marsha Blackburn were talking about it, you had teenagers and preteens across America who were having literal panic attacks, whose parents said they were suicidal at just the prospect of TikTok being taken down. And a TikTok on high from the CCP was sending out messages to TikTok users saying, call your legislature, call your legislator, call your representative, call your senator, and tell them not to vote for this TikTok ban. Again, it's not a ban, guys. Freaking chill. If ByteDance agrees to sell to a U.S. owner, so it's not like they're giving it, they will get something in return. As long as they agree to sell, TikTok stays online. But when you introduce the issue of CCP ownership, that's where there's a problem. That's where folks in Congress have an issue. That's where I have an issue. Okay, I want to tie in one more news story with kind of the theme of the day as far as issues with the Democrat Party and people who are finally starting to see the light. So I have a dear friend of mine who is dating a guy here in Los Angeles who you might not necessarily know his name, but I guarantee you that he and his companies, his entities, his influence affects every single one of you every single day. He's very powerful. He's Hollywood royalty, and he's really great to my friend, I will say. But he is, oh boy, he is dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. He is a Democrat super fundraiser. He held Hillary Clinton fundraisers at his 26 or $27 million home. I'm telling you, he is Democrat through and through. Now, his daughter happens to be a student on campus at one of these places where these pro-Palestinian protests are taking place. And guess what? This guy, and I assume his daughter, are Jewish. And so I have thought for a long time, ever since we started seeing these protests, ever since we started seeing this pro-Palestinian stuff activating within our U.S. borders, I have thought to myself, I wonder how this is going to affect even the cultural Jews in Los Angeles, because a lot of people don't understand it, you know, and I can sympathize with this incredulity, which is how can Jews vote for Democrats? I get it. But here's the issue. Most Jewish Americans, especially in places like New York and Los Angeles, obviously outside of the Orthodox and Hasidic Jewish community, are cultural Jews. They identify culturally with Israel and with their Jewish background, but they don't go to synagogue. They are not practicing Jews from a religious standpoint. I don't know the situation with this person who I'm talking about. I don't know if he goes to synagogue. I don't know if he is involved in a synagogue. But I know that there are people who are just culturally Jewish in Los Angeles who this is affecting. And I don't know if they will have a walkaway story like Mark did. But I know that it's going to impact at least some of them to the degree that they won't be incentivized to show up for Joe Biden. And that will affect the popular vote in a city, in a state like California. It's not obviously not going to affect the Electoral College vote, but it will affect the popular vote, which is one of those talking points that Democrats love to use after a Republican is voted into the presidency, which is, you know, tearing down the Electoral College and deciding the president based on the popular vote. So, all right, I want to finish with one little story that also ties in the squatting issue a little bit. New York Mayor Eric Adams was on a flight. I think he was coming back from Miami, going back to New York from Miami, and some person gets all up in his face. This person is off camera. You can't see this person. I will say it sounds like they have a mask on, which makes me think that they might be a Democrat. But anyway, this person is confronting Eric Adams, saying, F you, there are homeless people all over my city, homeless people all over New York, and you're always partying. Now, there is a lot of truth to that. And that is because oftentimes there are some of these nightclubs in New York, like there are in Los Angeles, that are membership only, and they cost literally $100,000 a year to be a part of this private club. One of them is Zero Bond, Amon New York, Avra. These are some of these clubs that Eric Adams has been spotted in. So while he's got illegal immigrants flooding his city, taking up space in shelters where American citizens should be getting assistance, squatting happening all over his city, and Mayor Eric Adams is down in Miami, I can only assume, to party even more. Maybe he went there for governmental business, but I'm pretty sure that in a city like Miami, he took full advantage of the nightlife. But Eric Adams is not an anomaly. I mean, these are mayors across here in Los Angeles. Obviously, we have Karen Bass, and as long as we're talking about partying mayors, back during my Hollywood days when I was going to parties in Los Angeles, I'm not going to say the name of this person, but there was a former LA mayor who was mayor at the time who I saw with my own two eyes snort cocaine off of a woman's stomach at a party in the Hollywood Hills. He, of course, is a Democrat. And when it's a Democrat, it doesn't matter. Nothing ever happens to Democrats. And nothing's going to happen to Eric Adams. You know, he started to speak out about illegal immigration, and the Biden administration yanked him back in by opening an investigation. And lo and behold, he's kind of shut up about the issue, hasn't he? Well, this protester, or this person on this plane, has had enough, like most Americans have. And it was pretty glorious to see. I loved it. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this edition of Furthermore with Amanda Head. We're going to be back with a fresh new podcast on Friday. So you can find that on Apple, on Spotify, anywhere you download your podcast. You can go to the website at furthermorepodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter. My account is at Amanda Head. The podcast account is at Furthermore Pod. I appreciate you being here, and I'll see you on Friday.